Great. All right, our next speaker is David Laurie.
Thank you. Good morning. Well, as was mentioned, we're one of the, 14 local communities that has received this grant funding to be specifically focused on tobacco. And we're very excited about this. We think we're going to have a major impact in our community, and I hope that will become clear to you as I go through this presentation and share our work to date. I also want to acknowledge Dr. Phil Wong, who is our medical director, who's really been a champion around this issue for decades and has really been a moving force for us locally in terms of our efforts. And Megan Cermak, who is a program coordinator with us locally, is here today. And although I get the honor to kind of share with you what we're doing, it's really Megan and her colleagues that are making it happen for us locally within Austin-Travis County. And it is Austin-Travis County. We're a combined city-county public health agency. Financial disclosure, nothing to disclose. After 40 years of working in public health, I don't have a whole lot there to reflect. Very rewarding career, however, I must say. Just to kind of give you a sense of the demographics as it relates to smoking, this is specific to Austin-Travis County, not very different probably than what we're experiencing nationally. Percent of smokers within the population, about 17%. As you can see, primarily the younger members of our population, 18 to 34 group, for example, is about 23% smoking rates, predominantly males at 21%. Tends to be the less educated portion of our population, ranging from 21 to 24%, and the lower income population. The population below $25,000 in annual income, the smoking rate is 31%. So again, this is important for us in terms of focusing our strategies and our approaches being more targeted. It's always important, and I think generates a lot of attention if we can sort of quantify impact and, from an economic perspective. This is important as we're working, obviously, with the business community, but even within our own city and our city leadership. So this is just an estimate of the impact to the city of Austin in terms of our workforce. If you look at a workforce of 11,000 employees and 17% smokers, almost 2,000 individuals, there are good studies that indicate absenteeism and lost productivity associated with smoking. And when you calculate that for the city of Austin workforce, the annual cost of the city is approximately $5.5 million. And that's not taking into account the healthcare costs associated with our workforce as well. Smoking ban, we have a long history associated with ordinances related to smoking within the city of Austin, dating back to the 1980s. And I think probably the important point here is that it's been very incremental over the years. The initial ordinances had a lot of exceptions, things like hours of operation, smoking areas, non-smoking areas, ventilated areas, non-ventilated areas, restaurants versus bars versus music venues. It just goes on and on. And over the years, that ordinance has incrementally become more and more stringent in terms of its application, with fewer and fewer exceptions or exemptions. Leading up to 2005, when we actually had a referendum, where there was a vote within our community as it related to smoke-free public places, and it passed, but it was extremely close, very, very close margin. But now we essentially have clean indoor air at all of our public establishments, music venues, which of course is very significant in Austin, all of our entertainment areas, sports activities, and so forth. And this ordinance was challenged in terms of it was suggested it was too vague. It was challenged from a constitutional perspective and actually went all the way to the U.S. Court of Appeals and was ultimately upheld. Our enforcement has been both in terms of the owners and operators of these establishments as well as people who smoke. And I would say, I think probably the most significant message or endorsement that I experienced with this was that at the time our mayor, who was very much a pro-business mayor, was quite concerned about economic impact and did not initially support this referendum and this ordinance. 2 years later, he publicly indicated that it's one of the best things that's happened in Austin, and there's been a dramatic improvement over that time in terms of people going to entertainment venues and so forth. And if it were to have been on the ballot at that point, 2 years later, he said it would pass by a landslide. So I thought that was pretty significant. The grant we're talking about is about $7.5 million. Very tight timelines, as was indicated earlier. The focus is on policy changes, systemic changes, environmental changes, because we really want to be able to sustain the impact of this investment. But I have to say that's a bit of a paradox for us, because the funding is short-term in nature, 2 years in nature. And those of you that work with folks at the policy level, I think will recognize that that is a long-term process. It's a long-term investment to work through that. And so although I think, you know, we're making extremely good progress, which I hope you'll see, I am concerned that the short-term nature of this investment may limit us in terms of our overall success. Our budget, just to give you a sense of the breakdown of the budget itself, almost $3 million associated with media. We are very much focused on tobacco-free policies, tobacco-free properties, campuses, and so forth. We're working with our healthcare facilities, our parks department. We're also looking at some of the disparities in terms of our social service agencies and the low-income populations I was talking about. We're working with a couple of major academic institutions. We have a large investment also in cessation and social support to go along with the policy changes, and of course have a very strong evaluation component and support components. You've already heard about the five MAPS strategies. We are focused on all five: media access, pricing, point of purchase, and social support. Right now, I would say more in terms of the media and access and social support, and some of the pricing and point of purchase prompts will be down the road. We have, as I indicated, in terms of the budget, a large investment related to the media, working with a agency that's assisting us in leveraging that resource in terms of media buys. We actually have a multiplier impact with that investment because of this particular contractor. And the media messaging is going to be not only about, you know, use of tobacco products and the concerns there and the focus on cessation, but also generating community support around the policy changes and around the smoke-free environmental elements of this. And very important that we think it, and we're being advised that the messaging not be about, you know, feeling as though it's like government intrusion or sort of government dictating behaviors, but more about being driven or coming from the community itself and the fact that people want to be in environments that are smoke-free. They want to, even people who are smoking, as you probably are aware, a very high percentage want to quit. So that's going to be more of the messaging. And as I mentioned, even on the ordinance process, ultimately the ultimate solution came from the community itself that said, you know, we want this, and that we think is critical to our success. Some of our tobacco-free worksite policies, we're promoting the CEO Gold Standard on cancer promotion, which also incorporates tobacco-free facilities and environments. Our Mayor's Fitness Council, which has historically been focused on nutrition and physical activity, has added tobacco-free policies as part of their certification process, where they certify local employers. We have a very strong tobacco-free school policies that we're supporting the schools on. And I have to say, our parks director, who is part of our leadership team, has really embraced this and is very excited about the opportunity to make all of our park properties tobacco-free. But again, a major policy issue, and one that has to be worked through with our constituents in a way that they will ultimately be supportive. And then I mentioned the disparities focus. We're including supporting cessation services for our human service agencies. We're a health and human services department, so we also provide human services, social services, in addition to public health. And we contract with about 55 community-based organizations that provide a whole host of social services, services for the homeless, subsidized childcare, mental health, substance abuse. And we're working with all those contractors and all of those agencies to have this become part of the standard operation within their agencies. Integral Care is our local mental health system, and they have already agreed to adopt tobacco-free policies, and we're providing funding and support for them. The homeless shelters, the estimate is about 70% of the homeless population use tobacco products, so this is also a population we're very focused on to initially provide cessation services and support, but ultimately probably look at some policies for those facilities as well. Healthcare facilities, these are the major healthcare networks and systems within our community, including our local FQHC, and they're all on board with this grant. We have partnerships and relationships with them, and they will be proceeding with these policy changes as well. In addition, the University of Texas at Austin, I think, has a student population of about 50,000 now, so that's a very significant area of impact, as well as Houston Tillotson, which is a historically black university in our community. Implementing clinical changes, all of our healthcare providers have agreed to incorporate smoking cessation and assessment for all encounters within their systems, making that a priority. And we're coordinating with the state health department around their quitline and free nicotine replacement therapy. And we, one of our providers, the Seton Healthcare Network, has agreed to provide tobacco cessation services community-wide. That is, access is available to everyone in our community, and they will particularly focus on those organizations and institutions that adopt tobacco-free policies. So they will provide cessation services right on site for those partners. It's a long list. I won't go over all of it. It's kind of a repeat of what you've heard, but I think the messaging here is that we got a lot of partners involved with this, serving on our leadership team, and they're going to be, you know, critical to its success. And I think the difference between this partnership and what we saw with the ordinance, for example, the ordinance was more the organizations like the Cancer Society, Lung Association, so forth. This partnership really embraces those organizations that we're looking to make these policy changes, these environmental changes in our communities. The barriers, well, you know, obviously sometimes it is very difficult and challenging to gain support. I mentioned earlier, I think probably the biggest challenge for us is working through the whole policy change process. It can be a sensitive issue. Some things that seem particularly simple about, you know, a tobacco-free campus or a tobacco-free facility, you get into little nuances there in terms of, well, is the sidewalk part of the property of that, you know, facility, or is it a public right-of-way, and therefore, you know, you can't control it. From a human resources standpoint, how aggressive are you going to be from an enforcement perspective if you have, you know, violators? And so even in our own case, we're in the process now of implementing a tobacco-free policy for all of the, not all, but a portion of the facilities within our health department and within city-owned properties. And we're getting a lot of questions at the management and policy level in terms of how that's going to be implemented, how it's going to be applied, and what are the implications long-term. So on the face of it, it may seem pretty simple. You just, you know, make a decision and dictate it, but the fact of the matter is it's a very involved and complicated process, and ultimately we want it to be successful. So it's really critical that we have the support and endorsement of people and they don't feel that it's being forced upon them. Our integral care system, the mental health system, the Board of Trustees there has already adopted a work-free policy. They serve about 18,000 clients. There are 44 different locations for our mental health system, and they are all moving toward tobacco-free implementation by February of 2011. So hopefully we'll be on target with that, and we're providing them with tools and support for that. Capital Metro, which is our transit authority, has also in the process of implementing a tobacco-free policy. They've approved it. They will prohibit tobacco products on the rail platforms. We've just initiated a light rail system there, and all of the boarding areas for park and rides, transit systems, and ultimately we'd like to apply this to bus stops as well. But that gets a little complicated too, because there's some local ordinances and issues there. I mentioned about the CEO Gold Standard. Dell Computer, which has adopted a tobacco-free campus policy, their smoking rates for their workforce went from 11% to 3% after they adopted this policy. So it really does change behavior. It really does impact individuals, and frankly serves as a motivator for a number of people who want to quit smoking to then take advantage of the cessation support services and so forth, and really, you know, make that decision to move on. And I mentioned we're going to not pilot, but we're going to start with a few sites within our health department, with our goal being to eventually go citywide. Conclusions, this obviously is a very large investment, but we believe it's going to have a very large impact, and it's going to be sustainable, because once these policies are adopted, they're in place, and they will carry on beyond the life of this particular grant. And the other thing I would stress, and I know sometimes it can be a little frustrating, we saw this with our ordinance process, and we're also seeing it with our tobacco-free campus and facility processes, that incremental changes lead us to ultimately significant systemic changes, and we just sort of take it a step at a time. So.